We're going to talk about it. Now, you've probably never quite had a day like the Parr family just had. After all, their city was under attack by a supervillain. His name was the Underminer. Man, if there was ever a villain that deserves to be part of a sermon series, this is the guy. And well, as good little heroes do, they used their powers to try to defeat him. Things didn't go as planned. The family didn't work as a unit. Instead, each person took a different approach to how they were going to defeat this villain. Nobody wanted to do the little things like look after Jack-Jack. In the end, they ended up doing more damage than good, and the villain got away. And oh, and by the way, they broke the law because superheroes were illegal. And how they got to that point, well, it's a little bit different, but you know what? As they're sitting around that dinner table and they're having that, we'll call it a discussion amongst themselves, you know what I'm betting? That scene looks very familiar to most families. Maybe we didn't get there because we have superpowers, but you know what? Don't know about y'all, I've had those moments before, because there is obvious tension among the family. There are definitely some issues that need to be discussed. There seems to be a generation gap. The kids are on one page and the parents are on another page. Speaking of pages, perhaps a mom and dad are not even on the same page. Didn't you love the way the kids went about it? Turn mom against dad. Well, you think this dad. Well, you think this mom. And the first thing you know, mom and dad are arguing. The kid's like, yes, score one for us. You can get mom and dad working against each other. Kids win the argument every single time. Mom and dad have to stay on the same page. What should lead to a conversation? What does it turn into? One big argument around the dinner table. You've never had these before, have you? Never in your entire family life have you ever had an argument around the dinner table. Obviously, you've never been to my house because we've had them bunches of times. And the funny thing is, when the argument is over, you end up eating dinner in silence. And then maybe you do something like turn on the TV, distract yourself from what's going on. Because who wants to talk about the elephant in the room? We just want to move on to the next thing. And the family dynamic, I'm looking at the smiles on the faces, and we've all been there. Even if you're just a family of two, you've been there. And if you're a family of one, you have another extended family that you grew up in, you've been at that dinner table before. And just so you know, at some point in your life, you're going to be there again. And if you're not there in your physical family, you do get it, right? Church sort of works the same way. Gary alluded to this in his communion meditation about how there was strife and distress in the church as they came around the table. Things happen in the church and, well, it goes south on us. Feelings get hurt. Nobody really wants to deal with all of the conflict. I think my batteries are dying. Let's try that. There you go. Nobody really wants to deal with all of the conflict. So what do? In the church, we just try to push forward. Go on to the next thing. Maybe we even try to get over it. But we have to do it, right? We have to come around this table every single week. And as we come around this table, it's just like the Parr family. We're coming around and there's just stress amongst us as we come into one another's presence. Have you ever been in a church where there's stress? Okay, if you've been in this church over the years, there's been stress in this church through the years. Every church has it. The only way you can not have stress in a church, here's the way to solve it. Don't have any people. If you have people, there will be stress in your church. And at some point, the pressure builds and everything explodes. Been in a church when the explosions happened? Yeah. Again, if you've been in a church with people, you've had these moments in your life. And well, it all comes from one thing, the lack of communication. put this out in the email this week. If I went from organization to organization, and I don't care whether that organization is a business or whether that organization is a church or whether that organization is a family, if I went to you and said, give me the thing that's wrong with your organization, what do we always start with? Lack of communication. Somebody doesn't say the right thing the right way, or something doesn't get conveyed, or we're missing information. So we have a lack of communication, which is important that we understand this idea, because communication is a process by which information is exchanged between individuals through a common system of symbols, signs, or behavior. Communication is an extremely important thing. It's that thing that lets people know what's going on. It's that thing that lets us share our hearts with one another. And when it begins to break down in the church or in your physical family, there's a lot of repercussions that go on. As a matter of fact, these are the symptoms of some poor communication. So you can go ahead and ask yourself if you have any of these problems going on in your house or in your church. Yelling, holding grudges, keeping secrets, blaming, given the silent treatment, using ultimatum or threats, labeling someone bad instead of the behavior, or sometimes even going to the point of bringing harm. You ever seen those in your house or in your church? Yeah. You know what? They have some consequences. This is what happens when you have improper communication. It leads to false assumptions. Well, I thought we were doing it this way. Nope. Well, nobody told me. Nope. It's a communication problem. False assumptions, jumping to conclusions, worry, fear, concern, stress. Here's one, gossip, and the lack of information. Somebody will make some up and spread it. That's just what has to happen. And lying, division, separation. So given how important communication is to our family, and given how important communication is to our church, I thought this would be the week in the middle of our Building the Incredible Family to take a time out and let's talk about how we become incredible communicators and have incredible communication. And here's the thing. Everybody needs this lesson, including me. Everybody has a communication problem. Everybody. I don't care whether you're 80 or 8. You have a communication problem. Even if you're 8 months old, you have a communication problem because you can't talk. So you have to figure out how to get people to give you what you need, right? That's just the way it is. So everybody, this sermon applies to everybody because everybody could improve their communication somehow. And the first thing we need to know about incredible communication is the idea that words are incredibly powerful. This is what James said in James chapter 3, verses 3 through 6. We put bits in the mouths of horses to make them obey us. We can turn the whole animal. Or take a ship as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong wind, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. We forget it. Words, they are powerful. What's our phrase? The pen is mightier than the sword, right? That's what we believe. As a matter of fact, we used to tell our kids, sticks and stones can break your bones, but you know what? It isn't that words can never hurt me. Words can absolutely crush a spirit. Man, you can come home and you can be in the best mood possible. You've had the most awesome day. You got a raise. The world is going good. You know, gas went down. Prices are good. The government is going. Everything can be wonderful. You can walk in. How many words does it take to destroy your day? Just one. Just one misspoken word, and that entire day comes crashing. It works that way in the church, right? You can come into church, and you've had such a great week, and you're all fired up to get in God's presence, and you're excited, and then out comes words, and it all comes crashing down. They're powerful, and we need to remember that. But unfortunately, we treat words like a child that found a pair of scissors in a drawer. I don't want to run through the house with them and just wave them around, and we don't realize just how dangerous they are, so let me just enlighten you. Once spoken, they can never be reclaimed. Once they come out of your mouth, you can't go out and go, you can't put them back. Once they come out of your mouth, they are spoken. And in today's world where we have text and email and all these different ways, once they come out, all that can be done is they have to be dealt with. And your words, once heard, they can never be forgotten. There's an old adage that we tell teenagers, I am getting old because I call this an old adage, and this really hasn't been that long. We always tell our teenagers when they start getting on the internet, or we tell our kids these days, they get on the internet, what's the thing we tell them? Nothing is ever gone from the internet. Once you post a picture, it's there forever. I don't care how many places they delete it from, it's somewhere forever. You know your words work the same way? Once somebody hears them and they get into their brain, they cannot forget them no matter how hard they try. Years may go down the road, and you may have spoken that thing 20 years ago, and something will come up and say, well, I remember when you said, and you're like, really? Yeah, 20 years ago you said this. Okay. And you know who's the best rememberers around here because their brains are young and fresh and got lost of space? Kids. Man, they'll remember everything they got. And when there's time, they'll take that word out and stick right where it needs to go because they understand words are powerful. And so they can never be forgotten. You can't erase your words. So if they are so powerful, don't you think there are things that we need to learn how to control? What comes out of my mouth? What I say? James tells us we can control a horse and a ship, but not our tongue. That's impressive. That's how powerful your tongue is. And so this is what I would like you to do. Just take a moment. Lay your pens down. No fill in the blanks for this part. Just listen. We're going to go to Proverbs, and I want you to hear what Solomon has to say about our words. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19. Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but by the prudent holding of their tongues. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18. The words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 3. Those who guard their lips preserve their lives, but those who speak rashly will come to ruin. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Boy, do I know that one. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13. To answer before listening, that is the folly and shame. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 23. Those who guard their mouths and their tongues keep themselves from calamity. If you've taken the Proverbs challenge, if you remember what that was, there are 31 chapters in Proverbs. Therefore, it would take you 31 days for you and your family to sit down and read it together, one chapter at a time. You probably have already started hitting some of these verses. And Solomon talks a whole bunch about how much the tongue ruins our family situation. Jesus chimed in Matthew chapter 12, verse 36. But I tell you, that everyone will have to give account on that day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. So let me just tell you something. When we get to heaven and we're all standing in line to give an account, if you see me in front of you, sit down. Because we're going to be there a long time when I get to the front of the line. But you know what? They're going to be there a long time for you too. Could you imagine what that? You wonder what we're going to do for eternity? Now you know what you're going to be doing. Give an account of every idle, empty, misspoken word I've made in my life. Do you know how much room that is? I mean, I'm 53 years old, and my mouth tends to run a lot faster than my brain thinks. Okay? So I've got a lot of words to make up for. So maybe I want to use the rest of my life to be a little more prudent in the way I use my words. Because you know what? I'd really like you to have your turn when you get up there to Jesus too, and not take all of eternity going over just my words. But we don't think about that. God hears every word you spoke, And he says, guess what? Although you are forgiven, it's like a tape recorder. Are you looking forward to that day when God plays the recording back to you and says, hey, why did you go this route? You had an opportunity to do so much good, but yet your words got in your way. So with that in mind, I stole this. I have to tell you straight up. I was doing the research for this particular topic, and I was writing my sermon, and I was putting it together. I came across a website called crosswalk.com. And there was an article on there called Family Communication God's Way. And then at the bottom of the article, when I finished reading, it said free to use. So when you give me a freebie and it fits everything that I want to say in a sermon, I take the swing and I take the freebie. So this morning, if you want to just kind of follow along, we're going to bounce to a lot of scriptures. But if you want to, after this sermon, you can go out and look at crosswalk.com and look at the whole article yourself. But we specifically are going to go to what was at the bottom of that article, and I'm going to give you 6 principles for building incredible family communication. Now, understand what this is. This means if you are interested in your communication being different in your family, all you have to do is take these 6 principles and apply them, and I guarantee you, your family will change. It's a 100% guarantee. You're thinking, oh my gosh, yeah, I want this. Well, just be careful, because here come the 6 principles. And it begins with incredible patience. Be completely humble, gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love. And yes, I know patience was a topic in when we're dealing with our kids, and you might see patience again. But if you are going to be an incredible speaker and an incredible communicator, you're going to need a little bit of patience. Because guess what? This is not an episode of the Brady Bunch. Every problem is not going to get solved in 20 minutes or less. Communication is all about this process of listening. Remember, it's a process. You listen, you respond, they talk, you listen. It has to go back and forth. It has to work this way. Communication, it takes time. And let me just go ahead and tell you, you cannot communicate with the TV on. Okay? Here's the other thing. You cannot communicate when your kids are this. Okay? Texting back and forth over the dinner table is not effective communication. Okay? That's not how it's supposed to be done. And you're smiling, but there are families that this is the way they communicate, even when they're all on the same bill. They text one another. And that's not effective communication. It takes time. Even when Jesus outlined resolution conflict in Matthew chapter 18, he mentioned multiple steps that would take multiple sessions to clear up a problem. And this is one of the problems with our communication today. Why? Because I want it solved now. I want to be able to get in front of you, vent my frustration, you tell me I'm right, and then we're all good and I can walk away happy. That's not effective communication. That's not being patient. Sometimes it's just going to take time. Feelings have to mend. People have to process, and everybody processes at a different speed. And not only is it going to take us some incredible patience, it means we're going to have to be incredibly truthful. Instead of speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is heard, that is Christ. Now this is important, because I want to tell you something. Dishonest communication, I think, is a plague in the church. We walk up to somebody in the church and we ask them how they're doing. I'm fine. Everything is good with my life. And man, their life is in shambles. And then when it all falls apart, well, nobody called me because you didn't want to tell anybody what was going on. You wanted to keep it to yourself. So we don't want to be truthful. When you're broken, say you're broken. When you're hurting, say you're hurting. When you're upset, be upset and tell and come and communicate to somebody, because the reality is we have to be truthful. Now, when you decide to be truthful, make sure you don't exaggerate issues. We call this making a mountain out of a molehill, right? We take a little bitty issue, and the first thing you know, we've built it into a great big thing. Don't exaggerate the problem. Don't skirt around the issue. If you've got a problem, especially in the church, say what your problem is. Don't mask it with another problem and say, well, I'm upset at this when I'm really upset at that, because all that's going to do is cause poor communication. We've already saw what that causes. Don't combine issues. Just so you know, this is my favorite. This is my go-to move when I'm going to win an argument. So we start on this issue, and I'll go back and grab about five more issues, and I'll attach them to this issue. And the first thing you know, you don't know what issue we're talking about, so I win because you're completely confused. Don't do that. And again, you're smiling because guess what? You're saying, me too. I like to do that too. Yeah, this is my favorite go-to move when I'm trying to win an argument. Combine my issues, roll them together. And obviously, don't lie to cover up issues. Don't look at somebody and say there is no problem if there is a problem. The Bible tells us that God wants us to resolve our problems, and they are so important. It says if you've got a conflict with another person and you come and it's time to give your gift, go home. Go resolve your problem, and then once you've resolved your problem, come back and give your gift. Don't just cover it up and move on, because that's poor communication. You see, to have good communication, you have to be truthful with yourself. You have to begin to ask yourself, what is the issue? And why am I really so upset? Now, there's an amazing thing I find out a lot of times. I'm not as upset as I was. I just was upset about something else, and they just was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I went off, and it wasn't even their fault. And again, you're smiling because been there, done that. Every single one of us does this. And once I'm truthful with myself, then I can be truthful with others. Jesus tells us this. He says when you're going to be a good communicator, you have to remove the plank from your own eye, the great big problem you have, to find the tiny speck in somebody else's life. So the next point that we want to look at is we have to be incredibly intentional. So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer live as Gentiles do in the futility of their things. They are darkness in their understanding and separated in their life of God because of their ignorance. That in them, due to the hardening of their hearts, having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. And I want to tell you something. I had to think about being incredibly intentional, and to be honest with you, this almost became five principles because I almost cut this one out. I had a hard time wrapping my head around this until the light bulb came on. And I realized I grew up in a very poor communicating family. We're yellers. The family I grew up in, we are yellers. And guess what? The one that can yell the loudest and the longest, you win. And that's important for us to remember because communication isn't about winning, is it? We don't usually go into an argument. Well, okay, we do go into the argument to win the argument, but what we're supposed to be doing, resolve the issue. And so we're a family of yellers, and in my communication today, I have unfortunately taught my kids the value of yelling. The loudest wins. And in my family, we got some big voices. So if you're ever riding down Battery Street and you can hear out on Battery Street the noise coming from our house, yeah, we've got big voices in my house, and so we can yell. Here's the funny thing. I would not count my family I grew up in very good communicators. We weren't. So the idea of being intentional is I actually have to learn how to swim upstream from what I was taught. I have to take all the things that I grew up with in my family, all the ways that I like to resolve my conflict, that I like to communicate, the yelling, the ultimatums, and I have to take all that stuff and put it aside, and I have to come into your presence intentionally with the purpose of helping the problem out. I just want to let you know, I'm not very good at this. You know how easy it is in the heat of the moment to get right back in the way you did it, and your voice starts to go up and you start to talk faster and your eyes begin to furl in a little bit and you're like, okay, this time I'm going to win the argument. I'm going to finish the battle right here, right now. And the yelling starts and on goes the competition. And again, you get it. You're there. But you understand, you have to go into it intentionally with an idea that I'm not going to do it the way that I've always done it. And not only do I have to be intentional, I have to be aware. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. It's a good thing the sun doesn't set on my anger, because some days it might be up for a few days. Okay, I admit I have had anger issues in the past, and the past may even be this week. I grew up an angry kid, is what they tell me. And one of the first things that they taught you when they send you to anger management is there's nothing wrong with being angry. You do get that, right? Things happen, and it makes you mad. You pick up the headline, and you read a headline, and you're angry. And if you do want to fight the battle, well, that's wrong. Well, no, it's not. Jesus got angry. As a matter of fact, this says that Jesus got downright indignant at times, to the point that he laid his disciples out for getting in the way of kids. He cleared out the temple a few times because of the way they were treating God's house. See, it isn't the idea of getting angry that causes us problems. The issue is, when do I go from being angry to being abusive? Now, I'm not talking about physically hitting somebody. But at what point am I no longer angry and now I'm just venting? It's no longer about helping us resolve our differences. It's the fact that I'm now going to take all of my issues that I've dragged with me for 53 years and I'm going to lay them all on the altar right now. At what point in my communication have I stopped problem solving and started to prove a point? This is me, folks. I read this one, and they could have just taken my picture and stuck it right next to this point, because this is my struggle. I can see this one coming from a mile away, and it's like a train roaring toward me. I can feel the frustration coming up inside of me. I can feel the anger, the fuse is lit, and I see it coming. I'm like, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And boom, it erupts, and you're right out there. And remember, once spoken, a word can never be unheard. And once heard, it can never be forgotten. And so I have laid down some very complicated beds of relationship because of my poor communication. And a lot of them stem from this fact that I have trouble controlling my emotions. I let them get the best of me. And then whoever happens to be the poor, unfortunate soul that walks in next, it's their fault. And we just let her go. Now, is that bad for a minister to admit that? I don't think so. Because guess what? I'm a human. And I struggle with the same communication issues that you do. And you need to remember, you have to be aware. Don't go into a situation thinking, I'm going to get even. There's another way that you have to look at things. You have to go in looking, thinking about being incredibly constructive. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building up others according to their needs that benefit those who listen. So look at the words. Helpful, building, their needs, benefit. Who's missing from that equation? Me. I'm not entering into a communication situation trying to win. Okay, I am. I usually try to win. I get in that mode very easily. I'm a competitive soul. I like to win. Okay, ask my kids. I like to win a lot. But when I am communicating, either in my family or in my church, or you can take this to your business or wherever you have interaction with people, when I am communicating, if I am trying to be helpful, if I'm trying to help them improve by building them up, if I'm looking out for their needs, if I'm looking for to benefit them, is it going to change my approach? Yes, it will. Because now I'm trying to be constructive. Unfortunately, usually, what are we? We take off the con and put in a D, and we become incredibly destructive. And we tear it all down. And then we wonder why we have to keep rebuilding it. And it's never as good as it was before. Because we've ripped into the very foundation of who we are. See, communication is never about the message you send. It's always about how the sender receives and perceives the message. I can tell you something, and I may have meant it one way, but the way it came out, or the way that I said it, or worse yet, the way I texted it, or the way I typed it, or maybe I made a typo that changed the entire meaning of the sentence, quite possible in my world, okay? It changes everything. And how I meant it to be perceived is not how you perceived it. And so now we have a communication problem. So I just want to stop a minute, parents, especially if you have little kids, and I'm talking under after teenagerdom, the ears have turned off a little bit. They don't hear half of what you say anyway. So you have to speak very slowly so they get every other sentence and they get it together. But when they're little, don't assume they understood what you meant. Kids are very exact word kind of people. And if you say, don't do this, and they're going, okay, well, I'm not doing that exactly, so what I'm doing is okay. And then when you get asked, well, I didn't do what you told me not to do, you understand the communication issue, it's on you. It's on the parents. And parents, make sure that you are on the same page together. I'm giving you some wisdom experience here. Make sure that before you do anything, that you and your spouse are on the same page as to what needs to be done. Because if you're not, you're going to tell the kid one thing, the other parents will tell the kid the other thing, and the first thing you know, now the kids have a weapon. You, against each other. They'll stack the deck, and they will use you effectively. So that's kind of my freebie for you this morning. Let's get to our next point. Let's talk about the idea that we need to be incredibly compassionate and forgiving. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, and slander. Well, how am I supposed to talk to people? You just took away all my good stuff. Well, along with every form of malice. Well, now I'm really a big deal. And then put some things on. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ God forgave you. Compassion is the seed of grace, which is the product of mercy, which is why when you score mercy, a 2 on the mercy series, you get the idea why I have communication issues. If I can't enter into an argument or into a discussion or any kind of a situation and I have no compassion for the other person, it's going to end badly. And for that to work, we have to get rid of those things. And again, this is the list. Bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, and malice. So when I'm going to come and I'm going to talk to you about any kind, those things I need to take off and leave here. Because if I bring them with me, they will come out. And then it's not just about what I take off, it's what I put on. Kindness, compassion, and forgiveness. Folks, that's hard. I cannot tell you in 53 years how many arguments and how many discussions and how many communications I've had with so many different people. But when it comes to the really hard situations, I can tell you exactly how many of those situations I went into with the idea of forgiveness. It's not hard to count. 0. Never have I entered into a communication situation where I come into it looking for a way to forgive. How about you? Probably not either. Because if you were looking for a way to forgive, you would just forgive and move on. What are you looking for? Revenge. Get even. Looking for justice. And Jesus says, take all that off. Come into this presence now and just look for the idea of compassion and to be forgiving. I wonder in our churches if we practice just this rule, how much would our church change? I'm convinced we wouldn't have a building big enough if we had a situation where people felt like I can come in and be myself and compassion and forgiveness abounds. But let's be honest. We don't really want to talk about the elephant in the room, do we? He's there. We know he's there. We know there are communication problems. As a matter of fact, I am going to guess that as I've been talking today, that somebody has popped into your mind that you have a difference of opinion with. Maybe you've had a stern disagreement with. Maybe you've had an argument with. And you know what? They are in your mind right now. And you're thinking, how do I fix it? You've got to put the six principles into practice. It means that you may have to take the first step, and you may have to be the person that goes into the situation looking for the ability to forgive. But a lot of times, we're like the picture that you see on the screen right now. The elephant is there, and he's huge, and we're just going to sit there, and we're going to choose to ignore it. It'll go away. It'll shrink after time. It'll starve. But in our families and in our churches, we need to deal and we need to communicate effectively with one another the way Jesus communicated with us. How did Jesus communicate to you? Think about this. He came, he taught, he showed, he sacrificed, he forgave. Those were Jesus' go-to moves. The question is, are those yours?